Hi friends, welcome to another episode of The Media Matters. I'm your host Chantel, and tonight I have my yin or yang with me. It's our resident Marie Rose.
Hello everybody, how are you? And how are you, my friend? I haven't seen you in forever.
I know, I'm so happy to see you. So I was vlogging on the way here, and I don't know how many times I said, I'm on my way to Marie's house. I haven't seen her in so long, I'm so excited. And it's been like a few weeks since we've recorded. Like we've been...
It's been a while. We've been going in different directions.
It's been just chaos. Tonight, we're biting our nails first and emergency responding second. What in the disaster are we talking about? Why haunted hospitals, of course. But before we do, big thanks to everyone that's hanging with me on social media, everyone rating, subscribing, reviewing, emailing, and everything in between. Hang with me on Twitter and Snapchat at Media Matters, on Instagram and Facebook at The Media Matters, on email at themediamatters@gmail.com, and via REMPod because I'm always around. It was a dark and stormy night, and I curled up and read and read and read your ghost stories. They are so much fun to receive and read, you guys have no idea. It's never too late to submit your real-life ghost story or stories. Just jot those little babies down and email them to me at themediamatters@gmail.com. You can also send them via DM on one of the show's social media pages, or hello, just call the show. That's right, my lovelies. You can leave it on the show's voicemail at 850-203-0118 to be part of the action. For your written ghost stories, I will personally read and reply to your message and contact you to make arrangements for you to tell your real-life ghost story or stories right here on The Media Matters. And no pressure whatsoever to be on the show. Marie and I are happy to read it on your behalf if that's more your jam. So remember, no pressure, no judgment, just good, clean, scary fun. For your voicemail ghost stories, remember you can call the show at 850-203-0118. Be sure to leave your name and the state you're calling from and let the ghost stories roll. As a reminder, these messages will be played on the air, so make sure you let me know if you would prefer to keep it quiet. Or not quiet, private. And if you would like, you can also leave us a message with your review for the show, show-related questions, stories, and more. So warm up those dialing fingers and start pressing. If you guys want exclusive goodies like bonus episodes, behind-the-scenes vlogs, and more at your little fingertips, make sure you join our super kick-ass, super exclusive, super family on Patreon and get immediate access to all the fun for as little as $1 each month. What exactly does that $1 per month mean for the show? Well, it allows us to pay for monthly subscriptions that keep the show running, buy better equipment so you don't have to hear static and all kinds of background noise, do cool things for you guys like shows, meet and greets, and so much more. So make sure you check out The Media Matters at patreon.com/themediamatters and join us today. Let your voice be heard. Post your ratings and review of the show or any of your favorite podcasts anywhere you listen to your podcast. The couple of minutes it takes to leave a few words or even 5 stars really does make a huge difference. It does help podcasts move up the charts and become more visible for newcomers to see. So if you haven't already done so, please make sure you leave a rating and or review for your favorite podcasts and make sure your faves get seen. Without further ado, let's get down with this week's tarot talk, which is brought to you by the one and only Marie Rose. Marie, take it away.
So the card that was drawn for today is the Ten of Cups. And I'm going to show this to Chantel. It's all nice and happy. It's got a rainbow over a family, you know, mom and dad. They've got their arms around. Yeah, a lot of their arms around each other. Their children are dancing next to them and all is happy in this little card. However, this little Ten of Cups card was actually drawn.
Oh, no.
Reversed. That sucks because... I mean, that's just, that tells me unhappy family, unhappy relationships. Maybe there's fighting within the family. Who knows? Or it could just, it drew this card just because sad friends haven't been able to hang out in a while.
That's true.
That's what I'm
going to. The universe knows.
Right. That's what I'm going to read into it.
The universe knows.
Right.
Man. Well, I don't know if that's an upper or a downer. Well, thank you very much for that reading that's going to carry us through the week, Marie Rose. This week's Can't Resist Crystal is the one and only Shungite.
Ooh, that is a good one.
And this little guy is also known as the Neutralizer. This crystal is so great for grounding protection and digital detox. Yippee.
I knew about, it's supposed to reduce anger, but I don't think I knew about the digital detox. That's mm-hmm. a good one.
From one of my faves, energymuse.com, surprisingly, shungite is a mineral that has yet to garner the same popularity in the crystal healing community as stones of a similar dark luster like black tourmaline. And you guys know how much I love some black tourmaline or black anything because they are just so good and protective. So while shungite is not a crystal, it is one of the strongest mineral healers. It's the only mineral that has been scientifically proven to possess fullerness molecules with powerful healing qualities. With a Mohs score of 4, it's a fairly dense rock. Its real strength comes when tested by fire, which, you know, who doesn't like some fire?
Right?
Mm-hmm. Shungite's ability to withstand fire and keep from melting has given it the classification of a pyrobitumen. I think I pronounced that right. But if I didn't, check out energymoves.com.
So this stone can survive a fire?
Apparently.
Oh, wow.
Yep. Its surface luster ranges from semi-metallic to matte black. And inside shungite is a non-crystalline carbon mineraloid. Shungite healing properties span the board from purity to protection. Shungite has electricity-conducing properties. These shungite properties are also known to aid in the inhibiting of EMFs or electromagnetic fields that are the result of electromagnetic radiation. Electromagnetic fields are created by electronic devices. Common electronic items such as laptops, cell phones, computers, and tablets all put out EMFs, all of which are sitting in front of us right this very moment. So placing shungite at the base of a computer, microwave, or around your various home electronic devices will not interfere with their operations, but will block out some of their free radical output. It's also used as an elixir. Shungite elixirs can be made by simply placing the mineral in water and allowing it a short time to purify. Drinking this purified water is said to have many beneficial qualities, such as an increased rate of healing and cell growth, so you could become your very own superhero, and detoxifying the body. Holding and meditating amplifies the shungite healing properties of headaches, back pain, blood pressure, inflammation, and muscle pain. The antioxidants in shungite are forceful impactors on health and a fully functioning immune system. Shungite healing properties are powerful for the spirit as well. It can be used to combat insomnia, boost energy, reduce stress, and relieve anxiety, to name a few. For even more information on shungite and other crystals and minerals, make sure you guys check out energymuse.com. Or I recently talked about Cassandra Eason's book on, it's like the complete guide to crystals, I believe is what it's called. And I got mine on Amazon. I'll make sure that I link that for you guys and link energymuse.com so you guys can read more. Or if you have another fave of your own, make sure you let us know so we can check that out because we love the crystals.
Yes, we do. Mm-hmm. Love, I think, is an understatement. Maybe addicted. Obsessed?
Both. What's bigger than an addict? A major addict. That's what we are. It's time to break out those gurneys and, well, just don't touch them. They're just creepy. Don't touch a gurney, guys. Take cover under your covers because it's time to walk the halls of the haunted hospitals.
You know, we still haven't gone to Pensacola to check out that haunted hospital.
We haven't done a lot of stuff.
The one that my daughter told us about, above the pizza place, I think it was, right?
The hospital's above the pizza place?
Well, it's not a hospital anymore. It's vacant.
Is that the one that people see like a light on?
Yeah, like children and, yeah, and stuff like that. And it's like, no, it's vacant.
I don't like little kid ghosts. They creep me out. Which reminds me, I need to tell you something off the air about an idea I have. I can't share it with you guys right now. I'm sorry.
Tease.
Maybe it'll come to fruition. We will see.
Tease.
Marie Rose, why in the name of Lucifer are hospitals so freaking creepy?
Well, it's a place.
Like, do they creep you out?
Well, I don't like hospitals. I don't like going to hospitals. I mean, people are sick there. People die there. No, I mean, it's.
People also get healed there. They get cured. They get
well. Yeah, but
they. Do you find them creepy at all?
I find them sterile. Well, as the hospital should be, and I'm not all about sterile. I'm about warmth and comfort, and a hospital does not scream warmth and comfort to me.
That's true.
You know, when I go into a hospital, I don't. I mean, because you walk by all these rooms and people are in there sick, and you don't know if their level of sick, you know, mm-hmm. or you just.
And things are beeping and.
I just don't. I don't. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'll go and visit friends and show support and whatnot, but creepy. Sometimes I'm creeped out by it because I know, especially if I know someone is, has just passed away, or if like you see an empty, I don't know what's worse, seeing a hotel or a hospital room that has somebody in it and it's like, ooh, how sick are they? Or seeing an empty hospital room, it's like, oh, did they die? You know, it's just,
that's a good question.
I just don't like it.
I think like the newer ones or the ones that are, like more updated, or they don't creep me out as much.
Maybe because are they making an effort to seem more
modern,
warm and homey?
I don't know.
As opposed to the ones that are sterile and, you know, you hear the footsteps echoing down the halls at night, you know, from the nurses walking. It's just.
Yeah, ugh. I don't know. It's like it's a lot of different things. And I feel like they do creep me out, especially like when you're there late at night and it's very quiet.
Mm-hmm.
And you hear like all the stuff, the equipment beeping and like a random phone will ring or. You know, but I'm going to say I have also watched a lot of scary movies, and just on the way here.
So you think it's self-inflicted?
No, I think there's just a natural creepiness to a hospital. I really do. Like,
well, yeah, because people die there. Morgues are there. Morgues are at the hospital.
Yes.
I mean, there are dead bodies there.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you might not be, you know, right there next to you, but you know, down in the basement somewhere, there's a morgue with bodies. And
well, I was also thinking of Michael Myers in Halloween 2 when he is stalking the halls of the hospital looking for Laurie Strode, and he's like killing people along the way because that's just who he is. He's like, get out of my way. And that's what it like makes me think of. Like sometimes it makes me think of things like that. Like not necessarily a slasher movie, but it's like all the spirits that are just like lingering there. Which why they would want to hang out at a hospital is beyond me. When I'm sure there are so many locations they could go hang out at.
Well, I think it's because they don't know and they're stuck there. I think some of them don't know that they're dead. They just know that they're in a hospital.
Maybe so.
And they're stuck there because they don't know that they've passed. And they're wandering around going, why this sucks.
Or like some of the places we're going to talk about, some very heinous things went down. And so they are souls definitely without rest because they suffered in the physical world.
And so they're stuck where they are.
Yeah, you know what I mean? Like they mm-hmm. were so tortured, and like some of these places did some crazy experiments on people.
Ugh.
It's not okay, guys.
No, it's not. That makes me. Ugh.
I know. It's not cool.
Like, shame on them.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. And now these poor souls are stuck here
people.
And they're not.
Scary people.
They can't find peace because they can't cross over.
It's true. All right, let's kick it off. Let's get down with the get down. We're going to start things with one of the most famous haunted hospitals, and that is Waverly Hills Sanatorium. So if you guys don't know about Waverly Hills, we're about to educate you, because so like I don't know of anyone that like hasn't talked about Waverly Hills.
Oh yeah, that's a pretty famous one.
Super famous. They do tours, they do investigations, like every paranormal team on television has been there. It's such a thing. Like I think the only ones that haven't been there are like the Ghost Brothers, but they are just now only in season 3, so maybe we give it time. I don't know.
Yeah, because they just started again.
Have you watched?
Not yet.
I haven't either.
Not yet. I haven't.
Because I forgot.
I totally forgot about it.
I need to go look to see what channel they're on. I know they keep their Twitter pretty updated and their Instagram. I need to look up what channel they're on and see if they're on DirecTV or not, because I'm about to cancel that DirecTV.
Yeah,
and so no, I need to I need to figure out how to watch them. And I think they've posted how you can.
But yeah, they. I've also seen. Them. I've seen Dalen tweeting, like live tweeting, and posting messages on Instagram when the show was on, and I catch it too late.
Yeah,
so I'm like, damn it, or I'm like not home or something. I'm like,
yeah, I need to find out what that schedule is and get on it.
Yeah, it's Friday nights
because. Oh, and it's rare that I'm home on a Friday night. Maybe that's my issue.
Yeah.
I would love to live tweet with those guys.
I know.
It's like, hey, your Florida girl's here.
I know. They'll be like, who?
They'd totally remember us.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I would remember us, but that's just me. All right. Waverly Hills Sanatorium. The word sanatorium alone is just creepy as hell. I don't care for
it. Yeah, because it's like, it's where all the crazy stuff happens.
Well, it's like a long-term care kind of place, and you know you're there for the long haul. Or these people were there for the long haul. It is not good.
No,
but this place in particular. All right, let's get down, because I was about to start talking about it, but let's just stop. So during the 1800s and early 1900s, America was ravaged by a deadly disease known by many as the White Death, which is tuberculosis. This terrifying and very contagious plague, for which no cure existed at that time, claimed entire families and sometimes entire towns. In 1900, Louisville, Kentucky had the highest tuberculosis death rate in America, which is insanity. It's so crazy to know that. Like, I didn't know that before, but I had no idea that, like, right here. I mean, not right here. We're not in Kentucky, but you know what I mean.
I know what you mean.
Like, down the street.
Up like north
highest,
a little bit.
Yeah, highest death rate. Built on low swampland, the area was the perfect breeding ground for disease, and in 1910 a hospital was constructed on a windswept hill in southern Jefferson County that had been designed to combat the horrific disease. The disease continued to run rampant through the region, and eventually, with donations of money and land, a new hospital was started in 1924. The new structure, known as Waverly Hills, opened 2 years later in 1926. It was considered the most advanced tuberculosis sanatorium in the country, but even then, even as the most advanced, most of the patients succumbed to the disease because tuberculosis was no joke. There was no medicine available at that time to treat the disease, and so many patients were offered rest, fresh air, and lots of nutritious foods. Sadly, the main use for the hospital was to isolate those who had come down with the disease and to keep them away from those who had not. Families were tragically divided, with parents and even children forced into the sanatorium with little contact with their loved ones. Treatments for tuberculosis were sometimes as bad as the disease itself. Some of the experiments that were conducted in search of a cure seem barbaric by today's standards, but others are now common practice. Patients' lungs were exposed to ultraviolet light to try and stop the spread of bacteria. This was done in quote-unquote sunrooms, using artificial light in place of sunlight, or on the roof or open porches of the hospital. Since fresh air was thought to also be a possible cure, patients were often placed in front of huge windows or on the open porches, no matter what the season. Old photographs show patients lounging in chairs taken in the fresh air while literally covered with snow. Other treatments were less pleasant and much bloodier. Balloons would be surgically implanted in the lungs and then filled with air to expand them. Needless to say, this often had disastrous results, and did an operation where muscles and ribs were removed from a patient's chest to allow the lungs to expand further and let in more oxygen. This blood-soaked procedure was seen as the last resort, and many patients did not survive it. And I shudder to think how it must have felt for the ones that actually did survive that. What was recovery like? I mean, what they must have gone through. While the patients who survived both the disease and the treatments left Waverly Hills through the front door, many others left through what came to be known as the body chute. This enclosed tunnel for the dead led from the hospital to the railroad tracks at the bottom of the hill. Using a motorized rail and cable system, the bodies were lowered in secret to the waiting trains. This was done so that patients would not see how many were leaving the hospital as a corpse. Oh my God. And their mental health, the doctors believe, was just as important as their physical health. There are many inaccurate reports as to how many people died during Waverly Hills' decades of operation. Some claim that tens of thousands died with the walls of the hospital, but this number is greatly exaggerated. According to Dr. J. Frank Stewart, a former assistant medical director at the hospital, the highest number of deaths to occur at Waverly Hills in a single year was 152, which is still a lot of people.
Yeah, that's a lot.
That's a lot of people. By 1955, those numbers had dropped to as low as 42 deaths, and it's been estimated, based on death certificates that were filed, that approximately 6,000 people died there, dating all the way back to the original hospital records from 1911. So even though, 6,000 people dating all the way back to 1911, that is still quite a bit. I mean, that's no joke. 100 and something in a year, even going down to 40 something, it's too much.
Yeah, so the chances of a spirit being stuck here pretty high those high numbers.
Oh, yeah. By the late 1930s, tuberculosis had begun to decline around the world, and by 1943, new medicines had largely eradicated tuberculosis in the United States. A small jump in new cases did occur after World War II, and many soldiers returning from the war were housed at Waverly Hills. Dr. Stewart noted in his autobiography that many of the soldiers had cases that were so advanced that they did not live for more than a week after arriving at the hospital. In 1961, Waverly Hills was closed down but was reopened a year later as Woodhaven Geriatrics Sanitarium. There have been many rumors and stories told about patient mistreatment and unusual experiments during the years that the building was used as an old age home. Some of them have been proven to be false, but others have unfortunately turned out to be true. Electroshock therapy, which was considered to be highly effective in those days, was widely used for a variety of ailments. Budget cuts in the 1960s and 70s led to both horrible conditions and patient mistreatments, and in 1982, the state closed the facility for good. Is it any wonder, after all the death, pain, and agony within these walls, that Waverly Hills is considered to be one of the most haunted places in the country? The building and land were auctioned off and changed hands many times over the course of the next two decades. And in 1983, a developer purchased the property with plans to turn it into a minimum security prison for the state of Kentucky. Plans were dropped after neighbors protested, and a new idea to turn the former hospital into apartments was devised. A lack of financing caused this plan to be abandoned.
Would you live there?
Hell no. Not even.
Knowing its history,
no.
Would you rent an apartment there?
Nope. No, I would not. In March 1996, Waverly Hills and the surrounding land was bought by Robert Alberhasky, who ran Christ the Redeemer Foundation Incorporated. He had plans to construct the world's tallest statue of Jesus on the Waverly site, along with an art and worship center. The statue, which was inspired by the famed Christ the Redeemer statue in Rio de Janeiro, was to be situated on the roof of the hospital at a cost of about $4 million. The next phase of his plan was to convert the sanatorium into a chapel, theater, and gift shop for another $8 million. Not surprisingly, donations to the project fell far short of what was expected. During the first year, only $3,000 was raised towards the effort, and the project was canceled in December of 1997. Alberhasky abandoned the Waverly Hills property and then, in order to recoup some of his costs, tried to have the property condemned so that the buildings could be torn down and redeveloped. This plan was blocked by the county, and according to rumor, demolition work was then done around the southern edge of the building in order to undermine the structural foundations and collect insurance money. This scheme also failed, and in 2001, Waverly Hills was sold to Charlie and Tina Mattingly, the current owners of the property. By 2001, the once stately building had been nearly destroyed by time, the elements, and the vandals who came here looking for a thrill. Waverly Hills had become the local haunted house, and it became a magnet for the homeless looking for a shelter and teenagers who broke in looking for ghosts. The hospital soon gained a reputation for being haunted, and stories began to circulate of resident ghosts like the little girl who was seen running up and down the third floor solarium, the little boy who was spotted with a leather ball, the hearse that appeared in the back of the building dropping off coffins, the woman with the bleeding wrist who cried for help, and even more. Visitors told of slamming doors, lights in the windows as if the power was still running, strange sounds, and eerie footsteps in empty rooms. Other legends tell of a man in a white coat who was seen walking in the kitchen and the smell of cooking food that sometimes wafted through the room. The kitchen was a disaster, a ruin of broken windows, fallen plaster, broken tables and chairs, and puddles of water and debris that resulted from a leaking roof. The cafeteria had not fared much better. Even so, a number of people have reported footsteps in the room, a door swinging shut under its own power, and the smell of fresh baked bread in the air. Okay. I might stay there for the bread.
That's not so bad.
Yeah, the bread, I can deal with that. Perhaps the greatest and most controversial legend of Waverly Hills was connected to the fifth floor of the building. This floor of the old hospital consisted of two nurses' stations, a pantry, a linen room, medicine room, and two medium-sized rooms on both sides of the two nurses' stations. One of these rooms, room 502, is the subject of many rumors and legends, and just about every curiosity seeker that had broken into Waverly Hills over the years wanted to see it. This is where, according to the stories, people have seen shapes moving in the windows, have heard disembodied voices, and if the legends are to be believed, have even jumped to their deaths. There are a lot of legends about what went on in this part of the hospital, but perhaps the biggest misconception was that this was a floor used to house mentally ill tuberculosis patients, and that was not the case. The patients here were not insane, nor were they confined to their rooms. They were free to move about, just like patients on all other floors of the hospital. This floor, thanks to its design, allowed patients to still benefit from the fresh air and sunshine that was believed to cure or at least extend the life of those with the disease. It was centered in the middle of the hospital, and the two wards extending out from the nurse's station were glassed in on all sides and opened out onto a patio-type roof. According to the stories, a nurse was found dead in room 502 in 1928. She had committed suicide by hanging herself from the light fixture. She was 29 years old at the time of her death, unmarried and pregnant. Her depression over the situation led her to take her own life. It's unknown how long she may have been hanging in this room before her body was discovered, and this would not be the only tragedy to occur with a connection to room 502. In 1932, another nurse who worked in the same room jumped from the roof patio and plunged several stories to her death. No one seems to know why she would have done this, but many have speculated that she may have actually been pushed over the edge. There are no records to indicate this, but rumors continue to persist. Those are the stories anyway. As with so many legends, no records exist to say that this actually happened or didn't happen. There are also conflicting accounts as to how the woman managed to hang herself. Some say that she did it from the light fixture, others from a pipe over the door, and some say from the rafters. There are no rafters. The pipe over the door was part of a sprinkler system installed in 1972, and the light fixture is hung on a light decorative chain that would not hold the weight of a person. There is no actual documentation of either death, although some claim the stories were verified by a former staff member, John Thornberry, who died in 2006. According to his obituary, he was born in 1922, which would have made him 6 and 10 years old at the time of the alleged deaths that were connected to room 502. This makes his verification, quote unquote, more than a little problematic. So what happened in room 502 that could cause so many people to claim paranormal experiences there? Overactive imaginations, or is it something real? It's hard to say, but it seems likely that something occurred in that room to cause the legends to take root in the first place. What that might have been, no one knows. The story of room 502 may have been loosely based on some forgotten facts, but the truth remains buried under all the speculation and rumor. In spite of this, strange things continue to be reported. Over the course of the next year, volunteers working toward the restoration of the building experienced ghostly sounds, heard slamming doors, saw lights appear in the building when there should have been none, had objects thrown at them, were struck by unseen hands, saw apparitions in doorways and corridors, and even more. So that is the rundown on Waverly Hills, which is creepy AF. Creepy. And listen, I am not volunteering my time to go over there and to get slapped, punched, bitten, kicked, smell disembodied bread.
You know you want to smell that bread. The ghost bread. You know that.
Marie Rose, I'm eating air. Don't tempt me.
Don't tempt you with haunted bread.
Mm-hmm, don't tempt me with haunted bread. So I do have a story from somebody that visited Waverly Hills.
Cool.
I know. And Waverly Hills is on my list. Like, I would like to check it out.
Okay, you just said you didn't want to go. Now you want to go.
No, I mean, it has been on my list. It has. I want to see what the hype is about.
So you do want to go?
I do want to go. I want to go to Kentucky to see it. Mm-hmm. She's staring at me, you guys. I feel like you could tell. All right, so here's the story on Waverly Hills, and then we're going to move on. But this one, there's just so much history here, and a lot of it just so negative and... unfortunate, you know?
Right.
And I wasn't there, obviously. I can't definitively say that the stuff that was done was malicious. It definitely sounds like, I mean, based on everything that I've read and seen about Waverly Hills when it was in its operation, it seems like a lot of that was done to try to find a cure and to help these people. It was all experimentation. I mean, they had nothing. There was no medicine available to cure tuberculosis. There was, you know, so that people couldn't breathe. I mean, their thinking at that time was, let's inflate the lungs.
Yeah, I mean, they didn't know.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean,
that's how things get discovered. But
the facilities weren't there at the time. You know, today's technology and facilities was not available to them. So I'm sure that, you know, during, you know, today it sounds horrible, but if unless you were there at that time and you used the tools that you had.
Mm-hmm. Which was, I'm going to cut you open and just put a balloon in you.
I know. And it sounds horrible.
Mm-hmm.
But back then when there was no cure, you know, I'm sure the patients were like, okay, anything. Mm-hmm. You know, who knows?
All right, here we go. The first time I visited the hospital was in September 2002. I was in town for a convention and a friend of mine who had been working with the owners at Waverly Hills offered to take me to see the place that I'd been hearing a lot about. At that point, the old hospital had been open for tours but had not reached the level of infamy that it has today. There had been no television shows, books, or websites dedicated to it in those days. It was literally a dark and stormy night when we arrived at the hospital and it had been raining all day, which is the perfect recipe for such a tour.
She went at night?
Yeah.
Ooh.
At night. A dark and stormy night, Marie Rose.
That just adds to it. Adds to the experience.
I don't think I'm that brave to do it on a dark and stormy night. I need a sunny ass day.
So you want to go during the day?
During the day. Because
I don't know. We did Imogene at night.
We did. I mean, I don't know. We'll talk about it. I was looking forward to seeing the place no matter what the weather, and not because I was convinced that I would meet one of the former patients face to face. It was simply to experience the place for myself. By this time, I had traveled all over the country and had been to hundreds of places that were alleged to be haunted. I had felt just the same way before exploring all of them, so Waverly Hills was no different. To me, it was just an old spooky building with a fascinating story. The fact that it was alleged to be haunted simply added to the experience. I had long since abandoned the idea of expecting too much. After meeting with the owners, we went inside and started our exploration of the building. The building was almost silent. All that I could hear was the sound of our own footsteps, our hushed voices, and the drip of rain as it slipped through the cracks in the roof and splashed down onto the floor. I was given the full guided tour and saw various rooms, the treatment areas, the kitchen, morgue, and on and on. We climbed the stairs to the top floor, and I saw legendary room 502, as well as the lights of Louisville as they reflected off the low and ominous-looking clouds that had gathered above the city. The only floor that we skipped over was the fourth, but my friend explained that this was the only floor in the building for which the entrance was kept locked, and he had saved it for last. When we finally arrived at on the fourth floor, I got the distinct feeling that something strange was in the air. I make absolutely no claims of any psychic ability whatsoever, but there was just something about this floor of the hospital that felt very different than any of the others. What had been nothing more than just an old ramshackle and broken down building suddenly seemed different. I can't really put into words what felt so strange about it, but it almost seemed to be a tangible presence that I had not encountered anywhere else in this place. And right away, eerie things started to happen. We had entered the floor in what I believe was the center of the building. Behind us was a wing that I was told was not safe to enter. Sections of the floor had fallen in, and this area was off limits to tours and visitors. The strange thing about it is that both of us clearly heard the sounds of doors slamming from this part of the building. I can assure the reader that it was not the wind either. The wind was not strong enough that night to have moved those heavy doors, and this clearly sounded as though someone was closing them very hard. When I questioned my friend about who else would be up there with us, he explained to me how unsafe the floors were in that section. I investigated on my own and determined that he was correct. There was no one walking on that part of the fourth floor. I switched off my flashlight and we walked down the corridor using only the dim ambient light from outside. The hallway runs through the center of the building, and on either side of it are former patient rooms. Beyond the rooms is the porch area that opens to the outside. It was there where the patients were placed to take in the fresh air. There was no glass ever placed in the huge outer windows, which has let the interior of the floor open to the elements ever since. On this night, the windows also illuminated the corridor, thanks to the low-hanging clouds that glowed with the lights of Louisville. We walked down through the dark and murky corridor, and I began to see shadows that flickered back and forth. I was sure that this was the trick of the eye, though, likely caused by the lights or the wind moving something outside. But it was there where the corridor angled to the right that I got a look at something that was definitely not a trick of the eye. In order for you to understand what I saw, I have to explain that the hallway ahead of us continued straight for a short distance and then turned sharply to the right. In the early 1900s, most institutions of this type were designed in this manner. It was what was dubbed the bat wing design, which meant that there was a main center in each building and then the wings extended right and left, then angled again so that they ran slightly backward like a bird or bat wings. Directly at the angle ahead of us was a doorway that led into a treatment room. I only noticed the doorway in the darkness because the dim light from the windows beyond had caused it to glow slightly. This made it impossible to miss since it was straight ahead of us. We took a few more steps, and then, without warning, the clear and distinct silhouette of a man crossed the lighted doorway, passed into the hall, and then vanished into a room on the other side of the corridor. I got a distinct look at the figure, and I know that it was a man and that he was wearing what appeared to be a long white drape that could have been a doctor's coat. The sighting only lasted a few seconds, but I knew what I had seen. And for some reason, it shocked and startled me so badly that I let out a yell and grabbed a hold of my friend's jacket. I'm not sure why it affected me in that way, but perhaps it was the setting, the figure's sudden appearance, my own anxiety, or likely all of these things. Regardless, after my yell, I demanded that he turn on a light and help me to examine the room the man had vanished into. After my initial fright, I became convinced that someone else was on the floor with us. My friend assured me we were the only ones there, but he did help me to search for the intruder in an empty room with only one way in or out. There was no one there. Whoever that figure had been, he had utterly and completely vanished. I doubt that I was the first person to see this mysterious apparition on the fourth floor, and it's unlikely that I will be the last. However, this sighting put Waverly Hills into a unique category for me, and that I will firmly state that I believe it is haunted. Usually, for me to do that, I must have my own unexplainable experience that goes beyond a mere bump in the night or spooky photograph. In this case, I had actually seen a ghost, and at the time, I could count the ghost sightings that I had had on two fingers. Hails no, ma'am and sir.
You know you want to go.
I mean, that's creepy.
It is creepy.
That is mega creepy. Ugh.
You just need to make sure you sage yourself. Wear your amethyst.
Girl.
Bring out all the protection.
I'm gonna have so much stuff on. I'm going to be weighed down. Like, I won't even be able to walk through the halls.
So, ooh. Yeah, that's pretty. What's the saying? Where there's smoke, there's fire.
Mm-hmm.
So to have that much notoriety and... I mean, there's something there. There's something.
Right. It didn't start from just nowhere. And, you know, there is that theory of, you know, things are quiet in a place until you start renovating and bumping things around. And then suddenly there's activity. Now, can you definitively say that there was no activity before if the place was abandoned? No, you can't say that.
No. I mean, do you hear a tree fall when, you know, in the woods if there's nobody there?
Right.
I mean, does a tree make a sound?
Right.
That's how it goes. Yeah. You get my drift.
Yeah, no, I do.
So, I mean, this place probably has all kinds of spirits, and they probably get perturbed when people come check them out because you're upsetting their daily routine.
Right. They must think like, oh, new patients. Get them, guys.
It's like, this is our space, my space, your space. Get out.
Back.
You don't like it when I visit your house. Don't visit my house.
I know. Hit us with another one, Marie Rose.
Okay, so let's talk about Princeton Hospital. It's definitely one of the most haunted places in Orlando. This psychiatric hospital is haunted by a number of spirits, to include patients, doctors, and nurses.
They all haunt the place?
The spirits of these? So it goes.
Wow.
Yeah. So these ghosts have been seen, and it's also known, they've been known to move things around, to include empty wheelchairs going down the hallways by themselves.
No, mm-mm. I draw the line at gurneys and wheelchairs. That's so, my limit.
So there's one ghost that's quite popular there. He said that they say he used to be a patient there, and he's got hollow eyes, and he is often seen staring at the staff. And there's a disagreement among the employees as to whether he's a sad ghost or an angry ghost. My point is, it's not a happy ghost, so
I feel like if he were a happy ghost, he wouldn't stand there looking at people with hollow eyes,
right?
Like he would, I feel like you would get like a positive vibe from him,
right? And so no one is getting a happy vibe. It's the debate is sad or angry, so that's,
it's not a debate, he's unhappy,
right? So the second and third floors of the hospital are said to be the hot spots for paranormal activity, with people reporting hearing unexplained knocking, disembodied moans and voices, and lights turning on and off all by themselves.
Absolutely not.
Yeah, that's just a small sample of the strange happenings at this hospital. It was renamed to Lakeside Hospital about 19 years ago, but still, a haunted hospital is a haunted hospital no matter what the name is.
Agreed.
So that one is in Orlando, not too far from us,
mm-hmm.
A day's drive.
I feel like we should go.
You want to go?
You know what? One of our friends to the show wants to meet with us in St. Augustine and Orlando.
Oh?
Yes, because she also lives in Florida.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't remember what we were talking about. And she was like, oh, we should meet up. There's so much. And I've heard about St. Augustine being like having a very haunted history.
Yes. There's something about St. Augustine, and I wish I could remember what it was. The archaeology department over at West Florida had discovered that it may
be haunted.
Has some original origins there, old, like one of the oldest origins in the United States.
No doubt.
Yeah, I can't remember the details. I'd have to look it up.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, the historic city, probably more historic than we realize.
Mm-hmm. Onward we go. Next up, we have the Eloise Complex in Westland, Michigan. So what started as a poorhouse and farm in 1839 gradually expanded to add a psychiatric hospital, a tuberculosis sanatorium, and a county hospital. Eloise was a virtual city unto itself, consisting of 76 buildings on a 900-acre property and housing about 10,000 people who were homeless, mentally ill, or in hospital care, along with 2,000 staff members. It also had many of its own support services, including a fire station, power plant, and cemetery with numbers on the stones instead of names. Modern day visitors said they've encountered mysterious moans, screams, and a spectral woman in white at the asylum. A TV reporter who explored the facility returned with shots of glowing lights floating around her and the camera crew. Eloise went up for sale in 2015, but hasn't found any willing buyers yet. But if you ask about hauntings, Mike Deegan, who is handling the sale, will tell you what he told Stat. Can't talk to you, clients rule. He knows something. Mike knows something.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Keeping it quiet.
Yes, he is. What do we have next, Marie Rose?
Okay, so in Illinois, there is the Alton Mental Health Hospital. And this hospital is still a functioning hospital. You know, it was built in the early 1900s, but it's still in business. And so there's no tours allowed. It's strictly forbidden. But in the early 1900s, it was known for its harsh mistreatment of patients. Like you mentioned before, at Waverly, the electrode shock therapy. But they also performed lobotomies and cold water treatments. And that was their everyday practice, you know, back in the day. So the people there today, to include the staff, the visitors, the patients, they all report hearing unusual noises, doors randomly slamming shut, and undecipherable whisperings. One of the creepiest reports comes from a nurse who was on duty, and she heard someone ask, "Who's that?" She turned around to answer, but there was no one there. And
that's not okay.
And the later that day, the exact same thing happened to another nurse. So it wasn't just her. People who have taken photos while on site has caught images of orbs with pained faces inside the orb, and that creeps me out, because there you've got photographic proof mm-hmm. that there's negative energy right. there. So and the fact that this place is still functioning, you know, over 100 years later, it's like, oh, yeah, there's definitely some
shut it down, guys.
Some pained spirits,
yeah, for sure.
Around
it's a long
there,
history.
Yes, it is.
Yikes! Right, up next we have Northville State Hospital in Northville, Michigan. So Northville opened in 1952 and was one of the most modern mental hospitals in the United States at that time. Northville was an early promoter of art and music for treating patients who could practice playing musical instruments or performing in plays, as well as study trades or work in hospital facilities. But as priorities shifted in the 1970s, Northville declined steadily, closing in the early 2000s. The abandoned hospital then became a subject of local folklore, with a lot of people sneaking into the hospital, many young people seeing it as a rite of passage. One visitor created a whimsical video advertising Northville's former glory and welcoming new patients, while another posted a series of photos from inside. And while many trespassers who went to look for ghosts instead found hefty fines and community service hours, but some of them who did avoid getting caught describe Northville's tunnels, which ran under the hospital to provide heat and water through a system of pipes. In these tunnels, people have reported hearing footsteps and voices along with the sensation of someone breathing on them. No, that is not okay.
Breathing on them?
Yeah. Keep your breath to yourself.
I hope they had a mint.
Ma'am and sir.
So what we have next is the Danvers State Lunatic Asylum in Ooh. Massachusetts. It's otherwise known as the Witch's Castle on the Hill.
That is comforting.
So it was built in 1878 on a site which was originally known as, which was originally in Salem Village, and it was the first location of the Salem witch trials. That gives me the creeps.
The very first location.
Yep. When it started out, Danvers was renowned for its modern treatments and superb patient care, but
and then
it all fell apart due to lack of funding, overstaffing, overpopulation, which caused the facility to deteriorate and become more of a concentration camp than an asylum. In the 40s and 50s, the facility housed more than 2,000 patients in the building, and the building was only designed for 600. So,
oh, good Lord.
I know. The patients became haggard. They were left alone for days. Things were so bad that even if a patient died, they wouldn't notice for days, if not weeks. So in the early 90s, the asylum was closed down and demolished, and they built a set of apartments on that property. So even though this haunted, insane asylum was torn down and a brand new building was erected, there is still bizarre activity, paranormal sightings, I mean, you name it. The people who live there, the people who visit them, they've recorded full body apparitions, flickering lights, and the sound of unexplained footsteps and doors opening and closing all by themselves. So, yeah, what we said about apartments earlier, I would not live there.
Not at all.
I'm not about living there.
Agreed. That is too creepy for my blood. We have a little travel time, and we're heading to St. Augustine, Florida.
Okay, so that's not too far. Right. About what, five, 6 hours from here?
I don't know. It's too long. I think Pensacola's far.
Pensacola's only an hour.
I know. We're going to the Haunted Spanish Military Hospital of St. Augustine. So the Spanish Military Hospital is considered to be the haunted hospital of St. Augustine, which makes me wonder how many haunted hospitals do they have there if it is considered to be the haunted hospital? What in the H is going on over there?
Make things that make you go,
I know. You can locate this hospital, which was originally named Our Lady of Guadalupe, in the village of the Spanish Quarter in the nation's oldest city. The building that you will discover is not the actual hospital that stood from the late 1700s to the year of 1821, but an exact replica. In 1821, the city of St. Augustine had to replace several water lines that were actually under the hospital, so they decided to remove the original building and rebuild, which is crazy. By the time the city started tearing down the old walls of this particular hospital in an effort to revamp the water lines that carried water to several businesses and residences, many patients and employees of this haunted hospital had been documented in stating that something evil and frightening seemed to roam the ward. This evil presence seemed to hang in the air like a dense fog, often frightening patients and running off specialists that were hired to treat the sick and the dying. While it was often believed that perhaps the lingering air of death in the ward may have been accountable for these feelings, the city quickly discovered the possible culprit. Once the walls had been removed and the ground was turned for the new water lines, thousands upon thousands of bones were discovered.
Sounds like that movie.
Poltergeist?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm, that movie. The North Florida Paranormal Research Group has established that the bones that were uncovered seem to be a type of burial ground. It's believed that the burial ground belonged to the Timucuan people. The Timucuan people are a group of Indians that were native to the area of St. Augustine in the earliest years of history. This was quite a remarkable discovery. However, in the year 1934, a group of people were working at the area near the ever-popular Fountain of Youth in St. Augustine, preparing the turning of the ground for an orange tree crop, and another burial ground that was uncovered seemed to also be Timucuan Indian-based. It is believed that the evil and frightening presence that lurked in the original Spanish military hospital were the many souls that had been buried underneath the original structure, very much like Poltergeist. Despite the fact that the new structure has been built, hauntings from the earliest days of St. Augustine still seem to occur. There are several rooms in the new structure. You have the morning room where patients were moved prior to passing on to the other side. It is here that a priest would come into the hospital and bless the dying. A number of hauntings have been said to occur here, although all seem to be residual. This means that they are more or less recordings of events that took place in the area. None of the hauntings seem to interact with the living. In many cases, there are sounds of cries and screams in this room and even conversations that seem to be relatively distant. Many have claimed that when they visit this room in the haunted hospital, that there was an imprint on the bed that looked as if someone were laying on it, but no one was there.
So there was like a curvature in the bed?
Right, like an indentation.
Mm-hmm. It wasn't just a cheap mattress?
I mean, I don't know. The ward of the Spanish Military Hospital in St. Augustine, Florida is another hot spot for paranormal activity. This is where the sick and the dying were kept until they were moved to the morning room. Seeing as how there were many wards throughout the time in which this haunted hospital operated, it's often a room where many were in severe pain and there were people who were very sick as well. It's been documented that sounds have been heard in this area, objects have been moved, and misty apparitions have been seen here. Dun dun dun! No, thank you. I shall not visit that morning room. Not in the morning or the evening.
Not in the morning or the evening?
Nope. Not even a little bit.
Okay, so I've got one from a mental hospital in Pennsylvania called the Byberry Mental Hospital.
The Byberry.
The Byberry. It first opened in 1907, and it started off, and I find this interesting, it started off as a working farm for the mentally ill.
Hmm.
So, I mean,
give them something to do.
Right. So I think that's honorable, you know, having a, you know, mentally ill, sure. Having a, you know, work the farm outside in the sunshine, fresh air. I think it started off with good intentions.
Mm-hmm.
So in the 20s, it became a full-fledged mental hospital. And as more and more people were admitted to the hospital, Byberry's population significantly increased, which led to patient neglect and a lot of abuse. This is starting to sound familiar. And lack of funds left the hospital in a state of disrepair, and patients basically being forced to survive on their own, insufficient food, and this is gross, sewage-filled hallways and padded cells, horrible. And solitary confinement, beatings, again with the electric shock therapy, restraining devices, lobotomies. I mean, this place sounds like hell. It sounds like hell.
Mm-hmm.
So in 1990, the state authorities closed down this mental hospital, and a thorough investigation revealed the inhumane living conditions. So it wasn't that, you know, these stories were made up. I mean, the state actually investigated and found all this nastiness and horribleness. And so this place will always have a dark history.
That's so sad.
It's awful. And then, so the facility sat empty. So it became inundated with the homeless, gangs, thieves. Some say satanic cults went there.
Because why not?
Right. And there's even reports of former patients who just didn't have anywhere else to go, went back there.
Oh, that's sad.
It is. It's horrible. And
I don't like the story, Marie Rose.
I know. It's a haunted hotel or haunted hotel. Haunted.
I know. Why do we keep going back to that?
I don't know.
I think I started it.
A haunted hospital. There is one legend, which I doubt it's true, but there is a legend that says there is a mentally deranged, violent patient who still lives there. He lives in the basement.
Like a real living person?
Yep, beneath the building, and he lies in wait with a large knife ready to slit your throat.
Okay, sir.
You know? Okay. So I think that's...
Everybody calm down.
I think it's teenage ghost stories.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, that could be a good movie.
Yeah.
That'd be a good... Yeah, you'd go see it.
The Mister in the Basement.
Right. So this hospital is the spot for a lot of paranormal sightings, including a human-like growling and physical scratches actually appearing on people who visit there.
Oh, that's pretty bad.
Yeah. Yeah, this place is horrible.
Well, considering all the stuff that went down, it's kind of like what we were talking about earlier, why hospitals are so creepy. And when there's such a history like that and experimentations were done and actual abuse, like, because there is I think there's a fine line between the experiments for good and then it just becomes, let's see what happens.
Yeah. And then now you're the mad scientist.
Right.
I mean, you're not doing it for good anymore.
Right.
It's
for
evil.
Your pleasure.
Right.
Yeah. So
it's awful.
Oh, that's so sad. I didn't like that one. I did not.
No, I don't. No, it's creepy. That's creepy.
Yes, that is creepy. Lastly, in part one of our haunted hospitals / hotels, because we can't seem to get away from that, we have the Beechworth Lunatic Asylum.
Another asylum. There seems to be a theme here.
I know, a lot of asylums. This little place is in Beechworth, Australia. So, yeah. Formerly the Mayday Hills Lunatic Asylum, now La Trobe University's scenic Beechworth campus, this place saw 128 years of terror before closing in 1995. Apparently, 9,000 patients died here over the years, and people were so fast and loose with the term lunatic that few patients ever left the premises alive. It comes as no surprise that a few people lingered after death. Faces floating in windows are a common sight, along with Matron Sharp doing her rounds and children laughing. Tom Kennedy, who used to transport the dead out of the asylum and died there himself, still hangs around. There's also a woman who was thrown out of a window and died in front of the hospital because she was Jewish, and the only person allowed to move her, a rabbi, couldn't make it to Beechworth sooner. Obviously, there are nightly ghost tours, because why not? It's not okay. It's not okay. You know what, you guys? We have some stories for you straight from hospital personnel. Dun, dun, dun. So here we go. Let's kick it off. I had my first weird slash creepy hospital ghost instance that I have no reasonable explanation for. I don't even necessarily believe in an afterlife or give it much thought. I'm pretty sure when we die, it's just like being out of surgery. Anyways, I work on a busy surgical floor and do 2 12-hour days, then 2 nights, then off for 4. During my day shift, I had a patient who was only in his early 50s but had terminal cancer and was in extreme pain as it was all throughout his bones. He decided to undergo physician-assisted suicide and asked that I be in attendance. The doctor came and performed the procedure on my second day shift. The next night, I came in for my shift and I had a new patient that was a 45-year-old man who had just had a small bowel resection and was staying in that room. He got back from surgery that morning and was totally clear, walking around okay, and was only taking something mild for the pain. He was completely oriented and not confused whatsoever. Anyway, around 3 a.m., he starts ringing his bell and I go to his room and he asks me why this other patient keeps coming into his room and telling him to leave. He seemed genuinely freaked out and a bit annoyed, so I asked him to describe the patient and he did, and I couldn't really think of any patients on the floor that fit that profile. This entire time, our care aide was sitting outside his room charting on her mobile workstation. I asked if she saw anyone and she said no, so I started looking into all the rooms, but everyone was asleep. I told the guy, I'm not sure who it was, but if he bothered him again, to ring right away and let one of us know. 45 minutes later, buddy rings again and same thing. I looked all around and couldn't see anyone up. The care aide was still there and she had not seen anyone either. I asked for a description again, and this time I wrote it down as I was going to tell security. And as he's describing this guy, he mentions this fish tattoo on his forearm, and I think, weird, the guy in here before who died had a tattoo like that on his forearm. Then I told this to the care aide. She was the one who then mentioned that it sounded like the guy who had died, and I freaked out and we were both really creeped out after that. I just told the guy to go back to bed. We would be dealing with it in the hallway. I have never been so creeped out. All right, here is another one. When I first started at the hospital, the charge nurse I made friends with on the oncology unit told me some ghost stories. One was about a little boy who died a long time ago from severe burns when that was the pediatric ward. He said people will report seeing a little boy with bandages wrapped around his head and they would die a day or two later. It sounded like a typical run-of-the-mill ghost story until I was working on a med-surg floor across the hospital one day. I had this patient whose condition was not improving, an old man with heart failure and arrhythmias. At one point during the day, I go into this man's room and he says, y'all need to do something about this little boy that keeps coming in here. Since I haven't seen any kids running around, I asked him who he was talking about. He said, that boy with all the bandages wrapped around his head. Needless to say, my heart sunk to my stomach and I looked around the room, somewhat excited but scared as well, since I had never experienced something like this. I asked him if he said anything to him. He said, yeah, he sticks his head out of the wall up there and smiles and asks me if my pacemaker is working. And he pointed to the upper back corner of the room near the ceiling. Sorry to tell you guys, there was nothing there, but I can say that I was 100% freaked out. He didn't see the boy again to my knowledge, but when I came back the next morning, he had been transferred to ICU overnight. And that is the only time in my life I have truly believed slash came close to experiencing a ghost story. So in her story, she doesn't say what ended up happening. Damn it, nurse.
You know, I used to work in a hospital. I worked at Eisenhower Medical Center and at Walter Reed Medical Center. Mm-hmm. And I never had a ghost.
Damn
experience. Never.
Then why are you bringing this up?
You know,
I thought you had something good.
I don't know.
Make something up.
You can cut it out. I'm just thinking of all these haunted. Mm-hmm. You would think I would have come across something.
I know.
You know, and I'm trying to remember. I'm trying to remember something.
You also weren't as.
I wasn't sensitive.
Right. You weren't fine tuned.
Right.
That's true too. I mean, I think back to and I'm like, there's a lot of stuff that I purposely blocked out, but I'm sure there's stuff that I just shrugged off and yeah. I mean, I don't know, just to get through
it. I'm trying hard to think, you know, there had to have been a ghost story at Walter Reed because there's some old buildings there on that campus. And it just in the surrounding area, but I just can't think of a damn thing. You can cut that out. I don't care. Random thoughts, thinking about haunted hospitals.
That's funny. All right. So I work third shift at a hospital on one of the coasts in North America. It's an awesome job, great pay, cool uniforms, and the right mix of mundane quiet time. However, comma, there is one big downside to this hospital. This bleeper has more ghost demons roaming the halls than any place I've ever encountered, and I've been to the other side, or near enough, of the world and back again more than once. A lot of bad bleep has happened here over the years. Lots of deaths, some cult activity in the area, and the neighborhood around the hospital is damn near a war zone. Every time I do a vehicle patrol, I hear gunshots. Hell, one night when I was halfway dozing while parked outside, I heard enough automatic gunfire that I thought I was back in Iraq for a moment. Anyway, there are several zones in the hospital where weird bleep happens. Now some of it can be easily explained away as electrical issues and whatnot, but some are just plain effed up. Here is a short list of the areas and a brief summary of what's going on there. East Tower. The East Tower is the oldest part of the hospital, and many moons ago is where the psychiatric ward was held. You get a very uneasy feeling when you're walking through there and will occasionally hear knocking sounds or very faint crying. I've heard these myself, but the big thing there is there's apparently a ghostly doctor and nurse that randomly stand in the halls like they are posing for a picture. They reportedly wear medical attire from the 1950s, and they just kind of stare at you from the end of the hallway. I've never seen this myself, so I can't swear to it. In the West Tower, there's an area where there are beds that have curtains separating them from the rest of the area. Every so often, you will see a shadow figure peeking around the corner of a curtain. I've seen this. On another floor, one of the doors we have to check will randomly come unlocked immediately after you've checked it. On yet another floor, a nurse walked into an empty room and found a dark figure sitting on a couch. She screamed and fled the scene. When security responded, they found the bathroom sink running and wet footprints all over the area and an indentation on the couch like someone was still sitting there. They rolled the camera back a full week and there was zero video of anyone entering or exiting the room. Didn't happen to me, but I trust the officers who told me the story. Front desk. Newspapers randomly go flying off the desk. No wind or anything. They just flip over and fall. An old woman sometimes very briefly pokes her head around the corner. No big deal, right? Well, this old woman's picture is on the wall that she hangs around, and she died 40 years ago. Dun, dun, dun. The South Building. Now for the cream de la effing cream. The South Building. One of the most terrifying places you could ever want to go. I can do a whole post just about this building alone. It used to be a school. The school burned down with several teachers and students in it. The whole building is just awful to be in. There is a little girl ghost who runs around. I've not seen her, but I heard her tell me, hey, once. I saw a shadow person in the hallways on numerous occasions. I've walked past doors that were locked, and I know they were because I shook them myself, and when I came back through, they were wide open. No one else in there with me. When I check the restroom sometimes, I hear a woman crying, probably the worst part for me. In the auditorium, you will see orbs and shadows moving. These are just a few of the things that come to mind about the South Building. Ugh. Ugh. That is creepers.
Yes, it is.
Mm-mm. I did not like that. Not at all. So the last story for the night, you guys. So this was last fall when me and a few friends went to an abandoned hospital / hospice / mental asylum that was near the biggest skate park in the city. I told my mom that I was going to the skate park with some friends, which wasn't out of the ordinary, so she dropped me off and we hung out till everyone got there. We skated to the hospital and tried to find a new way inside. I was looking at the top floor windows for some reason, and I saw what looked like a nurse in all white staring at us. After pointing it out to all of my friends, they all agreed that it looked like a nurse. We continued to look for a spot when I decided to look through a crack in a wooded off window. It was the middle of the day with the sun shining straight through the crack. While looking through, it was all light in there, but suddenly something moved past to the right, blocking the light for a split second. After having my friends look and say they saw nothing, I ripped the wood off of the window. We opened up what looked to be an office area with three cubicles with a closet on the right side of the wall. My friend walked to the middle cubicle and I had my phone flashlight on, looking through the door and into the hallway. My friend out of the window suddenly yells, "Get out of there, there's someone in there." Me and my friend, already freaked out, sprinted out of the room. My friend said he saw some shadow about 6'5 sitting in the back corner inside of the closet stand up and sprint straight at my friend. My friend outside is 6'2 and the shadow was bigger than him. After flipping out, we walked back over to where the nurse was and it was gone entirely. No explanation. Dun dun dun.
Dun dun dun.
Oh, creepers. Jeepers? Creepers. How did you like that, Marie Rose?
That's giving me the weebie jeebies.
Mm-hmm. I know it. Well, friends, that's our episode on haunted hotels. Just kidding. Hospitals, part one. We truly and sincerely hope you enjoyed this creepy content as much as we did. Thank you guys again for joining us for another Can't Miss episode and tuning in week after week. Don't forget to hang with me on Twitter and Snapchat at Media Matters and on Instagram and Facebook at The Media Matters, where I show you even more love. Are you feeling spooky? Make sure you send your real life ghost stories to themediamatters@gmail.com, via DM on one of the show's social media pages, or leave your ghost story on the show's voicemail at 850-203-0118. And remember, your voicemail will be played on the air, so make sure you let me know if you prefer to keep it quiet. Want the VIP treatment all the live long day? Join our kick-ass Patreon family for as little as $1 per month and get immediate access to all the goods. Check it out at patreon.com/themediamatters and join us today. Are you liking the show? Make sure to subscribe, rate, and review this and other podcasts you're loving. Your ratings and reviews help support the show and makes it easier for others to find your faves. With that, you guys, it is a wrap. We're back next week with part two of haunted hotels / hospitals, so make sure you tune in. Same bat time, same bat channel. Until then, may your days be supernatural and extraordinary. Good night, you guys.
Good night.